Hey everyone, welcome back to the Performance Marketing Minds podcast brought to you by Outbrain Direct Response. I'm your host, Joe Adana, and today, someone that I've known for years, Kyle Kisheka, the Senior Business Development Manager at ClickBank, joins the show. In this episode, Kyle highlights why marketing is actually an art of influence and how personal development and knowing one's strengths is key to success. We'll chat about trends in performance marketing, high margin products, and of course, native advertising, all while sharing tips on team building, consumer behavior, and a look into the future. So sit back, relax, and get ready to take some notes from the great Kyle Kisheka. Enjoy the episode. Believe me, I can talk forever. That's why that's why we started this podcast. Well, let's start there. So,
perfect.
Kyle, welcome on. Can you give people a little bit of background of your experience, how you landed at ClickBank, what you've been doing, and what's going on in your world these days?
Yeah, man, for sure. Well, first, thanks for having me, Joe. It's awesome to be here and hopefully talking to some people, not boring them, but in terms of my background, you know, I did not come into marketing or ClickBank in a traditional way. In fact, I was kind of horrified when it happened. So I came from an accounting and finance background. So I was a history major starting out in school, had a kid and thought, ooh, that makes no money. So I better figure out a way to make some money. So accounting and finance worked because numbers always made sense for me. So prior to ClickBank, I was actually working with a company. We worked with Fortune 500 companies on their fixed income asset portfolio. So I helped with their accounting and their reporting. I know this is where people are drone off, but I will say it got me to go to the Facebook campus, which is wild, man. That is a crazy freaking place. Like, holy shit. It's nuts. But essentially, it was a cool job, but boy, they did not pay like it was a cool job or pay like any of the clients we serviced. So I had four kids. I had a certain number that I needed them to hit. I did my part, but they did not meet that number. So I thought, in pure free economics, your value is only your true value if you test it on the market, right? So went out there. Ended up stumbling into ClickBank, not having any idea what they did. Had a friend that worked there. They hired me. I thought I was going to like help businesses improve their processes and improve like their accounting and stuff. I don't do any of that, guys. I probably create more accounting problems for businesses nowadays than I ever solve. But really, I got in, didn't even realize what ClickBank did, found out it was a marketing company, and thought I'd made the biggest mistake of my life. I went home, I remember my wife, and I was like, I think I have done something very wrong working for this company. And it wasn't until, funny enough, I read .com Secrets. That was part of the very limited training we had back then. It's much better now. Back then, not as good. I literally didn't even know what ClickBank did for my first 2 weeks. I was like, what? What's our unique market position? So it was a rough entry, but .com Secrets clicked for me because I was always a big fan of psychology, human persuasion, the things that help people and nudge them to want to buy. And then you pair that with the other thing I said, good with numbers, like numbers, accounting. Performance marketing is direct response marketing, is performance marketing. It's when numbers meet human behavior. So we know it's driving the human behavior to where we want because we have the numbers to prove that it does. Brand marketing gets really fuzzy. It's like we intend to do something with numbers that are just no attribution is tied to them, which I dislike. But I really love performance marketing because it paired my behavioral economic brain with my numbers brain. And it just, I always described it, felt like coming home. So did that for 2 years as account manager at ClickBank, was a director of marketing for a health and fitness company afterwards, one of our top clients. Realized that just at the end of the day, ClickBank offered me more money for less work. And I was like, okay. So came back and went to the biz dev side. And now I tell people I'm basically a business anthropologist. So I study lots of different markets, lots of different businesses. My job affords me to have a lot of amazing conversations with very smart business owners and marketers. And through that, I learn a lot of stuff. I divulge a lot of stuff and I take those learnings and apply them to my clients, to individuals like this. Because at the end of the day, I just freaking love marketing. I never thought I would, but I realized I was born for it. It's what makes sense to me, especially when you realize that everything is marketing. Like everything we do is marketing, because marketing at the end of the day is just influence. And marketers are the artist of influence. And so that's what I study a lot at ClickBank, is the art of influence and how to adapt it to certain situations. Now, that is a goal of oftentimes to go through ClickBank, but that is not my single goal. My goal is to do this for everybody, and if it works through ClickBank, great. But one of the nice things about working ClickBank is, for those who don't know, we've been around for 27 years now, which is wild. In internet times, it's like Al Gore made the internet, and we came soon afterwards. But what we do is we help take marketers or offer owners and affiliates and pair them together to make ease of commerce. Things are really, really easy. Things flow nicely. That's why I work with Outbrain and other people and so on and so forth. But the big thing is I get access to a crap ton of data. In fact, I'll say a shit ton of data because it's even bigger than crap. But so much data that really helps me then take ideas and trends and things I see on the outside and connect it with the agnostic, unbiased data that we have. So I could just, I like to think I could be a purist with my evaluations, and it's the funnest thing that I do. I've said this on other podcasts, and I think I've said it to many people before. I'm actually less money motivated and more motivated about being right about my ideas. So that's one of the things where maybe that's not beneficial if you know, you were in some super money motivated position, but to take advantage of somebody that thinks that way, because I'm always looking for that next big thing, easy oceans, easy places to make money, and giving ideas that I think are really exciting and well thought out for those to go and execute. And hopefully we'll share some of those ideas with some of your audience today. So if we have some questions, hopefully we can answer them and even give them some insights into things they should focus on and maybe things that other people aren't talking about and they could be early in on.
I love it. I love the background. I love the multidisciplinary history and even the history knowledge.
I'm a weird guy, Joe. I'm a weird guy.
Listen, so my wife tells me the same thing, but so am I. And I feel like I felt a lot of the best people in this world or the top people have a very similar story of coming from somewhere that isn't necessarily related, but they bring the same type of skills. You from finance, adding in the history passion. It's very similar to me. 10 years ago, before I joined Outbrain, I didn't know what a CPC meant or a click-through rate.
Yeah.
It was just, I had no clue. And then on the other hand, I despise sales because my first job out of school was sales and we were working off of Google Sheets and cold calling. And I said, I will never be a salesperson again. But then starting as an account manager at Outbrain, learning more about what a professional salesperson is, and it's not the money hungry, chasing revenue, doing all these things, but it's really connecting with people, being a problem solver and helping them get to the right strategy and being right. So I think it's super cool. And I think one of the best things salespeople do is have these unconventional background stories and also ways to communicate information. So somebody like you, how does having all of those different experiences make you become better at your job?
Yeah, well, I first wanted to know a dirty little secret. I love cold calling. So I actually used to do cold calling for insurance and just did like phone book cold calling. And not even real leads, man. I called a lot of dead people to try and sell them life insurance. Very uncomfortable. For those of you know have never tried that, when you ask if someone's there, see if they might be interested in life insurance, and they're like, no, they died a year ago. Well, hopefully they had some. Not a great line. We got lots of hangups. But, you know, I think one of the things that is really valuable for me in this job, and I would encourage a lot of people to try and do this more regularly, is if we go back to the history thing, I kind of talked about marketing is it's the art of influence, the language of influence. And so when you start to understand that in a broader perspective, it allows you to look at a lot more things for inspiration. Oftentimes where .com secrets gave me a pathway to understand the world, I immediately took what I knew about everything else in the world and my hobbies and interests around, like I mentioned, behavioral marketing. So I know a lot of people talk about like marketing books, but for example, one of the best marketing books that isn't technically a marketing book is called Nudge. It was actually done by an economist that were doing it primarily in how do you get and influence people, like certain things on like how do you change a box on a form to get more people to buy in to a certain government initiative. Well, you learn a ton of human behavior from that. Now, if I'm just stuck in marketing zone, I miss out on these things, right? Or one of the big things that got me really, I think, well known when I started as an account manager is before I ever started here, I've always been fascinated by things like, I was a big Greek mythology nerd when I was a kid. I loved the idea of studying theology, namely because I was very like angry as a Catholic. I was an angry altar boy. I said, and so then I had to study all the other things. And I became fascinated with the process of religion, which soon led me to cults and studying a ton about cults. And then realizing that, man, that is literally what every single business does. Like a good, like really the difference between a religion and a cult is the end game tends to be more sinister. The difference between a great marketing campaign and a cult is the end game is just a little bit different, but the mechanics are exactly the same. So when you start stripping things away and you could look at it not for like what it is on the surface, but what it is deeper in terms of that art of influence. It just helps me see things in a lot more of a, I think, broader way. And you could start to see the bones of what's happening underneath. One of, I think, the biggest challenges, especially for people that are sitting here and they, hey, I have some success, or you might have a success with a campaign and it falls apart. It's probably because a lot of people are following tricks and tips, not strategies. Strategies are more broad. You have to adapt your tricks and things like that and tactics into an overall strategy. But if you don't understand the broad sense of strategy, it's really hard to adapt it when things change, when tricks fail, when loopholes close, all of a sudden your business falls apart because you don't have that strategy mindset. So I try and live in the strategy mindset. It also helps you go like pull contextually from history. You could pull a lot of interesting things from history. And I'll share some examples of kind of what it's allowed me to look at when we get a little bit later and some things that people should be focused on. But I think it's one of the things that I was talking with Thomas about that. I didn't realize that there was a lot of trends on ClickBank that started when I started talking about it, that we saw in movement with clients. And I think it's because I just look at things in a little bit different way because of all those outside sources. I consume a shockingly little amount of marketing information. So I'll give you the Hermosi launch that happened, we're all been aware of, right? I'm sure a lot of marketers saw that and like just investing in all of it. When I opened up my Facebook over the weekend, I shut it down and said, I'm not doing Facebook this weekend because my feed was littered with all of it, right? And it's just, for me, it's like, I have stepped back and looked into it, and I'm seeing things that he's doing and realizing it was set up many, many, you know, gosh, probably 2 years ago, a year. He's been building to this moment. And there's a lot of other factors, but I think a lot of people look at it as these marketing launch factors. They're not looking at, if you actually go broader, you'll start to see that what he created is more than just marketing, right? It's something. It's a viral moment of history, and it's FOMO, like hypercharged. And then you put monetization as a tie to that, and you're crafting language, you're building a lot of things. But I think that's harder to see and interpret if you're only reading the marketing narrow scope of things, because all you're getting is old ideas and old tactics, and you won't necessarily understand them unless you see how they apply outside of the world of what you're actually doing. And I think that applies to everything. I mean, I'll say one more, like even if you think of like mathematics is one of the best examples of a strategy that's been practically applied, because actual mathematics was a thought experiment, right? It's a universe they created and put proofs around it to say, these are the proofs of this universe that exists in numbers. Lots of math was done and created without numbers existing. And then we added to them. Now we found practical applications, but math is theoretical and we apply it to real things. And I think that's important for people to remember. Marketing strategy is theoretical and influence strategy is theoretical and we apply it to real things. So understand the theory and see the application, and that's how you could start getting a lot better at this stuff.
Kyle Kosecka, the Nostradamus of performance marketing. This is crazy. And if you don't know who Alex Hermosi is, you've 1,000% seen his ads on YouTube and Facebook.
Yes.
And he was laying the groundwork for years and years and years before that he, mm-hmm. you know, eventually developed his own brand and started to
broke a world record, right? It will not be done again anytime soon.
An absolute maniac. But all of what you just said is a great tie into what I was going to ask you too, because the person listening to this and who I imagine listening to this and a lot of people that we see at conferences or speak to start off as affiliates. They're running ClickBank offers. They make a bunch of money. They're super successful. And they always think, okay, well, what's next for me? Okay, I'm going to develop my own company, my own offer, whether it's a physical offer like Nutra, if it's an e-com offer, or maybe it's a digital product. But I think what you said, those tips and tricks, which is the question all the time that we get from a network of, you know, what are other people running? What are images that are working? How can I almost copy, but in a nice way, do something similar to somebody else? And once they go to create their own product, they get kind of slapped in the face a little bit of everything that comes along with it. And I'm really curious from your end, talking with so many people that have taken that step and created their own offer, or maybe weren't even a business person before, how do you see the best people balance their goals and make it effective for everybody in their mix? Because it's one thing to have a great product, but then you're also thinking about, okay, if I'm putting it on ClickBank, how do I make it good for them? If an affiliate's going to promote it, how do I make it good for them? How does the ad network feel about it? How does the consumer feel about it? Like, there are so many different layers to it, and the tips and tricks kind of go away, and you really need to start thinking more holistically about everything. So what are the best people doing right now with that?
Yeah, so I think what's funny, one of the biggest things you have to do, and this is, I did a podcast with a guy named Jeff Soha, and he had a really, really great, because we were talking a lot about entrepreneurs. He works with almost exclusively high net worth individuals. So if you are not making like $2 million net worth individually, not your business, individually, you're not working with them. So he's seen the top of the top, some very, very successful entrepreneurs. And we were talking, he mentioned that the entrepreneur journey is directly tied to your own personal development. Your business's development will be tied to your own personal development. And that cannot ring more true, especially, and that's going to make a lot of sense when I say, especially when you try and make the leap from affiliate to going into offer owner. Because one of the big things that people need is one, why? Why do you even want to do it? Like, what are you looking for? So a lot of people are like, oh, that seems like the next step. Well, it is a step, but it doesn't necessarily need to be the next step, because maybe agency is the right route for you to go. Maybe sometimes too, based on your goals, what you're doing right now is just what you should be doing right now. You won't know the answers to those questions if you first don't know the path and why you even want to go in, or what path you want to go in. So I think that's one of the first people that need to ask themselves is, why the hell do you even want to start an offer? I have seen many affiliates be like, sweet, I'm going to go build a coaching offer. We're going to teach other people about the same thing I did. And they get into it and they go, oh my gosh, I hate every part of this. I make less money, I work more, and I don't like any bit of it, right? And I've extended to a place where I don't even, like, I just want to buy traffic. And so they feel like it's this dark pathway. It doesn't necessarily need to be. It's just they didn't ask that question of why beforehand. So first, ask yourself why. And then the next thing is ask yourself what you're really good at and what you want to do more of. One of the biggest mistakes I see a lot of entrepreneurs do is they assume they want to hold on and be good at everything. That's a horrible mistake. At the end of the day, you want to be really good at recognizing every single piece and part strength, including your own. And I'll use a great example. We'll do some sports as football season's kicking up. Look at Bill Belichick. He's a fantastic football CEO. One of his best things was he knew the strengths of each player and how it could apply and utilize that strength of that individual exactly in the place that it needed to be, exactly the right time. CEOs and running and being an entrepreneur on the offer owner side has to do the exact same thing. And you're never going to do that if you don't know your own strengths. So first ask yourself, okay, if we know I have a pathway, this is what I want to do to go, you know, create an offer. I get it. This is why I need to do it. The next thing you need to do is like, what am I good at? Why am I good at that? And what do I really suck at? And how am I going to make sure, even if I don't have the gap to fill right now, I know I'm going to have to fill that gap soon. So, and even if you're like, I don't know what it takes to like go on offer, we have a bunch of podcast episodes, go talk to an offer owner. But before you even do that, you have to know what your strengths and weaknesses are. I'll tell you the most common one we see is, well, I actually say is media buyers. I think you're one of two things. You're either the operator or you're a creative person. We see oftentimes in media buying affiliates. Operators tend to do a very, very good job replicating and being very efficient with their spend and their cash flow and numbers. They're disciplined, they're organized, they really could drive it, but what they tend to lack is that creative fire, right? They have to replicate, and sometimes you might be finding that's what's putting a cap on your performance. You're like, gosh, I do all this well, but I can't seem to be the one that comes up with a really unique idea. Essentially, you're like the generic brand, the RC Cola of the other Coke marketing that's out there. And that's okay, but you're like, what do I really need? Well, I need the creative person that I could go and grow. Or it might be the flip side, right? You just need to know who you are. And then I think the next piece is you need to partner, network, or find solutions to support what you're lacking. Once you have that, and you continue to grow into that, I think that's when you start to really transition into successfully becoming an offer owner. You know your why, you know your skills, and you're effectively allowing other people to fill in those gaps and trusting that they will do so. That's a big piece. It's one of the hard things from going solo to an offer owner. I'll tell you, it's very rare to have a singular offer owner that scales big time, that they're running all of it themselves. And if they do, you might do it for a little while, but you're unlikely to do it again and again and again. So that's the thing I'd already tell you. If you have the mindset you want to go build an offer, go build more than one, right? Go build several and have that in mind. And that's where you see the most successful people. So as I kind of sum into that, but the biggest difference as you start to transition is you know your skill set, you build your skill set, you leverage your business around what you already do well, fill in the gaps with others, And then you could be really successful long-term. The next thing I'll tell you though, just to shortcut stuff, find partners that take the parts that'll break your business and invest in them so you could at least learn without all the aches and pains. So like, this is where I will selfishly plug ClickBank, but you could do other networks as well. Finding a network that's going to take care of, say, your processing or finding other affiliates, that's huge. You just have a bunch of back-end stuff that you don't have to worry about anymore because you have tracking, you have processing, you have mids, you have a lot of stuff that you have to deal with. And if you've never dealt with that before, it's a huge headache that you have to figure out when you still haven't figured out how to sell the product, right? So I would say find partners like ClickBank where we could take care of processing, take care of all the parts of affiliate marketing that are likely to break your business if you don't know what to do, and also give you access to more affiliates. So it could be us, it could be Buygoods, it could be Digistore. There's lots of them out there. Of course, I'm biased to say that we're the best, but do your research so you could find out that we're the best. That's okay, independently. But it's not just that. You could things like ship on demand for supplements. Sell a lot of supplements. Go find somebody that's going to do ship on demand for you so you don't have to manage inventory. You don't have to worry about sourcing ingredients. You don't have to worry about finding the right manufacturer. All that's taken care of by somebody else, so you just have to sell. So there's lots of interesting options like that. Even one right now, it's called Naked Offers. They do essentially skincare. So you could have a white label, like really white, high quality skincare line, get a full line embedded into a Shopify store that gets built for you. Freaking awesome. And then just go drive traffic, figure out the other parts. Maybe you start building that product, but you don't have to overload yourself with things that you have to do. Because I'll tell you, the biggest difference is affiliate marketing is very narrow. You have one focus. An offer owner has everything that they worry about. So you're going to go from this to this. And the less that you have to worry about when you first start, the more likely you are to be successful.
I think I want to reiterate a lot of the things that you said, but one of the biggest pieces of advice that I've ever gotten about being a leader is understanding how to delegate and asking for help. And that really allows you to fly. Understanding the things that you don't know so that you can go and talk to as many people as you can to try and get the right answers or have people help you with certain things or whatever. And whether it's life or business, I feel like that's one of the main hangups. People don't want to let go of control, whether it's a money thing or it's just personality traits, and they want to own it all just like they are as an affiliate, like you said, and just maybe they're owning two or three channels of buying the marketing, but really it's one product trying to hammer it as much as possible. And being able to let go a little bit and allow yourself to fly, I feel like huge, huge thing. And you'd be surprised at how, not you, but people listening to this too, probably so surprised in how many people are just willing to talk and open up and just share, maybe not every little secret, but share directionally who you need to talk with, what you should be thinking about. That's kind of why we're doing the podcast. But I get sometimes LinkedIn messages or even just call people randomly and ask, hey, I saw this, what do you think about this? Or just those people are the key to making yourself successful and being unselfish about knowing you don't have all the answers and relying on other people and then bringing it back and acting like you're smart and found the answer. I think it's the biggest thing. And
yeah,
what you said, what do you want? I keep thinking back to Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams in The Notebook. Like, what do you want? Yeah. You need to figure it out. I talk about it all the time and in life. Like, what? You've got to think deeper below the surface. Mm-hmm. What's the actual goal of this thing? So completely agree.
For sure. I'll actually give one quick note on the idea of like the trust, right? Letting go, letting yourself fly. I will tell you, trusting other people and building out your team. I was talking to an operator, Yana Lee. She said it best. She's like, it's going to cost you money and they're going to fail and they're going to screw up. Good. You want them to. You hired them to learn, not for who they are now, but who they'll become in your business. And they have to learn, and you have to trust that they will make the mistake and then solve the mistake. Don't fix it for them, right? Trust them to do the job you hired them for. And I'll tell you, it's like it'll hurt and it might cost you a little bit at first, but it's an investment into your business and your freedom into the future, if that's truly what you want.
Yeah, I can imagine it's just like having a kid. My wife's pregnant. We're due in November. You got to let them fall. You got to let them get some cuts and bruises. And
it's hard.
You know, then they start to grow up and do their thing. But 1,000%, anybody that we hire, same thing. You know, make some mistakes. Please make some mistakes. If you're not making mistakes, then gosh, I don't know what we're doing here. You know?
Yeah, the only way to not make a mistake is never try, right? So
come on. So let's talk about this. What? Okay, someone understands all of that. They're ready. They're hungry. And now they're looking at Meta Ads library, and they're sitting on TikTok shop, and they're looking at some type of spy tool and see 20 different products out there. Mm-hmm. Not even 20. That's such an under exaggeration.
Yeah,
thousands of thousands of thousands.
Thousands of yeah. thousands. Yeah. What do I do?
So what categories are trending right now? I would love to hear. You guys are like the masters of seeing everything come in and out, not just Nutra, mm-hmm. but e-com, digital products. Like, what is popping?
Yeah, so I think one thing I'll tell you right now, there's a lot of craziness that's happening in the world. So a couple of things that you need to pay attention to is right now we're in a big world of distrust. People trust nothing. And we also do have where, I put it this way, there's some economic confidence, and where there might be certain areas, and I think of the media that are projecting economic strength, if you look at underlying factors in the economy and most financial reports, things are not going well for people. People don't have money. So I tell you, value-oriented products, products that fit in terms of more recessionary buying, or they don't ask as much financially from the individuals to build trust, to make them feel like they're getting value, for them to ascend into something more. Funny again, we could use Hormozi as a perfect example. His lead product that he just made probably over $100 million with close to $200 million by their 3 or 4 day time they've done it. What was the price? Did you remember the price, Joe?
No.
$27, right? It's a freaking cheap book. And it drove so much, yet he was selling $6,000, $18,000 packages for people to donate stuff. I know it came with a lot with it. We won't break that down. But I think that's really, really significant. And I have lots of examples that show when you're looking at these products, if they ask a lot financially up front, you're asking for a larger ticket price. That means your market's smaller, and you have one of two things to do. You're either going to go very, very premium, which means you're always going to have a smaller market, so you don't have as much room, right? You're going to cap out at a certain point. So your only way to make more money is to charge more and become more premium. And that might be the avenue you want to go. Just be aware that's a very competitive space unless you find a place where no premium exists, and we'll kind of get to that in a second. But anyway, just realize that. So I would tell you your biggest opportunity, and because of a lot of things going on in the world, is a surprisingly underserved opportunity, is to focus on recessionary buying trends. It could be things that lead with so high margin, low ticket, like value e-com or performance e-com. What I mean by that is you're not the lowest discount product, because it's really hard to have margins, especially when you're early on. Like, to be the lowest price option, it's tough, man. You normally have to have such large scale to make your economy, like your margins work. That's a tough place to be. But the mid-tier, that's where you find your sweet spot. You get a high margin product that isn't necessarily, it's right below the premium version, but it's above the discount version. Those are doing really, really well right now. We're seeing that, products that live in that space. Digital on ClickBank has had a very, very nice rise. And that's we're looking at sub $100 price points. But that seems to really, really be scaling. I was even talking to an affiliate, said, like on TikTok, he's like, dude, if the cart value exceeds $90, it won't work. So I think there's something really significant about the fact that that's happening on that much younger platform. And I would still say it's indicative of what we're seeing with a lot of the population. So I would be focusing on something that's going to be lower ticket or in that value conscious market. A couple other trends that I'll put out there that are just really interesting we're seeing right now. The last thing I'll say, whatever product you do, if you're doing starting out, acquire with the highest margin product you could think of. Whatever you're selecting, if you're like, oh yeah, I could sell it for $50 and it cost me $15, that's a bad idea. Do not do that. Run away from that product. It needs to cost you, if you're going to sell it for $50, it better cost you less than $5, right? Unless you're going to be selling a lot of that $50 item to make your margins make sense, especially for buying traffic when it's pretty expensive. So make sure it's high margin. That's the other thing. Now, in terms of trends to focus on right now, I'm going to tell you health and weight loss is hard. Nutra's hard right now. We had a lot of people over the pandemic. On top of that, the rise of telemedicine, the rise of Ozempic has been a big one that has really, really hurt a lot of the weight loss markets. You even see things, well, and I'll come to the others, but I think that's become a more challenging market, particularly because a lot of people with VSLs are focused on a certain ticket price that tends to be higher ticket. That's how you make a lot of these supplement bundles work. So maybe it's shifting away from supplements to digital health, or how could I make a supplement offer be more value oriented or economic oriented? So if that could work for you, that might be a way to focus. I'll give you a couple other trends that are interesting. And this is one I'm not seeing a ton of, but I'm starting to see more of it, probably because I keep looking up information about it. But I had this like thought in my head. We're about year two of a struggling economy, like pretty severely. And so if you looked at the 08 crash, when you saw the largest spike of divorces, it was in 09, right? So people experience it. And we know that when things get hard financially, people tend to bicker and fight, right? And so over the pandemic, funny enough, we had a lot more cash. People had a lot more freedom. There's also a rise of things like open relationships, this and that. Well, now that's contracted. So we actually had like a bottom in divorce rates over the pandemic. And so people are like, oh, everyone's staying together. Not necessarily anymore. Because if you look in Google search terms, we are seeing divorce lawyers spike in terms of the volume that people are searching for that, which means divorce is on the rise, which means products around relationships are really, really good to focus on, right? If you're repairing a relationship, if you're in the dating space, if you're finding new ones, whether it's male or female, I would really focus on those things. Even if you go on the other side, beauty would make a ton of sense. I'm divorced. What do I care about? Looking better. And maybe if you aren't going to be able to go compete with Ozempic, because that's like direct response marketing finally made their magic pill, especially with I'm hearing that they're supposed to be coming up with a Ozempic equal pill by the end of this year. Wow. Maybe that's hard to start out with, but what can I do to ride that wave? What if I made a skincare product that helped you deal with Ozempic face, right? We know if you lose a lot of weight, you have a lot of loose skin. Great. Find the skincare product that tightens that up, firms it up, and you wave, you kind of go on the wake of popularity in a way that people aren't addressing, making an economy-based offer, or you could go premium because if they have Ozempic, they probably, they're signaling they have some level of cash flow. So you could come and ride that wave. So there's a couple things that I would look at, and knowing that's going to also tie to a lot of divorce rates, you could do the same on the male side, right? Get some hair care products, get something that's going to bring their hair back, fitness products, all sorts of stuff, dating products. You know, those are ones that you could see rising quite a bit. And those are things I'd focus on. One last trend that I'd look at, or just tell you if you're building a product as an idea, I would really, really look towards pairing with a partner that has high levels of credibility. Doctors, functional practitioners, health coaches. Go out and find ones that have some level of social influence and target them and see if you could be the one that grows and blows up their product. I say that because we've seen, you know, unfortunately, we had to deal with a rough situation where we had some clients who were running some deep fake celebrity stuff, and we've cleaned it off. It was one of those things that was just hard to catch. People do shady stuff. It happens, right? But absolutely. I was able to see some back-end numbers of these funnels, and they were really impressive. But why? This is where it's always like, don't go run out and do deep fakes. That's stupid. Don't do it. Please don't get yourself sued. But what it does tell me, if that converts so high, where they're saying things they still shouldn't say, but it means that, and we live in this world where nobody trusts anything, but we still trust some people. We want to trust. We don't trust traditional forms that we're supposed to, news, science, medicine, right? We don't trust those big things, big business, but we still trust celebrities. They still connect with us, right? So we still want to trust our doctors. We want to trust people with a personality. We want to. That matters now more than it ever has before. So I think finding that authority, if you have that authority, build off of it. That's a great opportunity to pair that with an offer, especially if it fits in some of the other verticals that we talked about. And this is how my weird brain pulls from all different sources and comes up with stuff.
Listen, I love the weird brain. The divorce thing is super interesting. Not to plug my wife, she's a couples therapist, so I am interested to see what type of new patients might come in over the next year. But it makes a ton of sense. And I think, even though Nutra is hard right now, one of the things that we've seen in the weight loss category is somebody tapping into a completely different angle using Himalayan sea salt on the front end, using that in their pre-lander before it gets to the VSL, which is video service lander, if you guys don't know, sales lander. And it's doing better than all the legacy weight loss products that are on Outbrain. And it's super, super interesting, because I think people are starting to, the creative ones are getting back into the more emotional, psychological side of things, just like you're saying. So super cool.
Yeah. Curiosity is still very big. The last thing I'll put in this, like angles that take truths we once knew and flip them on their head. Very, very effective. Very effective.
So talk to me about this. One of the things I want to hear is what, because the part about TikTok was super interesting, about cart values over 90. It's kind of similar, but the opposite of how we work on Outbrain. I like when people ask us, hey, I have this e-com offer, it's crushing, CPA is $35. And I unfortunately have to tell people, hey, you know, it's probably not great for our network. That needs to be $60, $65 or above to really have you be able to make some money and make this successful. So I'm sure what you see from your seat are any and all networks coming in, giving traffic, conversion rates, all that kind of stuff. Where are you seeing things working really well? And where do you like to see, like, what is the most sustainable, beneficial networks over the last 2 years?
Yeah, well, I'll say the non-sustainable networks that still get scale, it's like this ping pong between Meta and Google, right? So when Meta gets hard, everyone goes to Google because they're like, oh, well, look, Meta's struggling. We're going to make it easier. And then recently, YouTube and Google got a lot harder. And so everyone went over to Meta. So there's always a bouncing back before then. I like to call it the Google and Meta. It's like the Zuckerberg black box of performance where you don't really know what's going to happen. It's always volatile. Now, there's benefits to those traffic sources. I think one of the nice things about Meta is I think it's the most price agnostic channel. You could pretty much advertise anything in there with some level of scale. So it's the most diverse there. YouTube, it's tough, again, similar to like native. Really low CPAs are tough to make work there. You need to have something higher normally on YouTube, or it has to convert like crazy. So that being said, I actually still see what we see is the least volatile, and I think my most favorite network, it is native. So native platforms, especially when you're on, this is not me just like lying. It's just, it's really sincere. But I think one of the things I really like about native is it's really predicated, similar to YouTube, where people go to be entertained or informed. But in native, I feel like you're almost always getting informed about what entertains you or you find interesting. So because of that, not only does it need to be a little bit more expensive, but I actually think you could get higher ticket more successfully there because the mere channel allows you to have a longer conversation. Because I'm going to go obviously from my ad right down at the bottom, the native ad, to a pre-sell page in most every situation, an ad, advertorial, an editorial, whatever way you're going to do that, there's going to be something in between. That gives you another opportunity just to get deeper into the marketing. And the deeper you could get into that, the deeper you get into the psychology, as well as build more trust, because you could make that look very high affinity. It could look like a news article. It could sound like a news article or sound like whatever they need it to. I think you could get away with being able to actually sell those higher tickets, which makes that higher CPA easier to digest. So I'm still a big fan of it. And I think one of the things that's interesting about it is the, like, people, we know that there's been a like, news has gone through a little bit of a rough go, but people's desire for information has not. And native is always leveraged in that exact place, is if people desire information, they're going to be exposed to native ads. And that's why I think it's really, really effective, and it will always be effective until all of us die and well beyond.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the story of why Outbrain was founded way back when. It was to help people discover new and exciting content that they didn't know mm-hmm. existed. And at first, there was no ads. It was just publisher to publisher and allowing people to continue their content consumption journey, learning new things that they had no idea existed. And that is the basis, the bread and butter, the main sales point of native. Someone is still committed to reading an article on CNN, Fox News, whatever your political affiliation, doesn't matter. It could be on Bleacher Report or ESPN too. But someone's reading something, and then we try and recommend them something that is either similar to the content on the page, similar to the interest that they know we've read before, or kind of like the Amazon thing of people that bought this also bought this. So we try and, you know, get the algo to make it make sense. Now,
yeah,
it's been hard over the years, and obviously South Park made an episode about native, and there are tons and tons of negative stories and things like that. And I used to go into these big pitch meetings with big, big brands, and they would always say, or they would answer on email and just say, we're not interested in doing the clickbait stuff. And we almost had a point at Outbrain where we changed the marketing, like leaning into clickbait, because it's actually just good marketing. As long as the story is accurate and concise, and you're not misleading somebody with some false promise and information. But really, how do you get people interested in that story or your product? That's the main goal of marketing. And as long as you're not deceiving somebody, it's okay.
Yeah. You know who loves clickbait? every single newspaper or magazine ever. Like, what do you think a headline is, right? It's read bait, but it's just the same damn thing. So, yeah, I think it's just all the worst tends to highlight the entire market sometimes, depending on how large that gets. But listen, native is not going away. I think sometimes the only reason it's not talked about more is just the lack of consolidation, because it's like, which native network am I going to choose? I'm really only going to choose Meta or Google, right? I don't have a lot of choices there. Native, it gets there's a lot of different flavors. You know, you're a little bit more like Baskin Robbins versus walking in and just getting my vanilla soft serve, right? It's a bit of a different story.
Yeah, and years ago we tried to make that a more clean story. And the whole Outbrain Taboola merger that never happened for reasons I won't go into on here. But totally, I think 100%. And that's why, I mean, even a couple years ago, we were at Affiliate Summit East and we had a panel and it was all the native networks on stage at one time. And it was crazy looking at everyone just thinking, man, we all do relatively the same thing. All this technology is basically the same. We're kind of telling the same story and it is a little nuts. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens, you know? We'll see what happens, but I don't really have anything else for you. This was awesome. I think we've been ripping for like 35, 40 minutes. I don't really know.
Yeah, 45 right now or something like that. I don't know.
Something like that.
Someone in that range.
Something like that. But anything else you want to leave us with?
You know, this is the last thing is that I think I always like to say this. If you're out here and you're sitting here making it, and two things I'd tell you, whenever you get success and you hit big success, treat it like it's never going to happen again. It's one of the smartest advice. Perry Belcher told that to me, and I think about it a lot because I've seen the reverse of that. So I do this because I love entrepreneurs, people that go out and make money for themselves and make their own dream and say, the path that was put before me, I think there's a different way. And guess what? You're probably right. The fact that you're here, you're listening to this, you're trying, you are right. Just keep going. Give it time. Just be happy that you did this, right? Success or failure doesn't really matter. The fact that you push through on this journey, you'll learn more about yourself. It'll be more valuable than anything you ever do. So grateful that you're doing it. And most importantly, when you hit that success, or if you already had, treat it like it's never going to happen again. Invest back in your business, invest back into your life. And trust me, this will be a great experience. Those that seem that success is just behoven to them once they have it once are those that are doomed to fail and lose everything they earn in the process. So just be safe out there and have a good time. And thanks for being an entrepreneur. We wouldn't be here without you. And I'm grateful for every single one of you.
Amazing stuff. Kyle, you're the man. And if you guys want more of this and to continue the journey and not just listen to this one and done, go check out ClickBank's podcast affiliated, him and Thomas McMahon. Awesome stories, awesome conversation. That's was a little bit of the inspiration behind this. I was like, man, Kyle, the ClickBank guys are doing it. Come on, we can do it too. So yeah, go check that out. And I'm sure we'll have you on in the future at some point. But thanks
again, man. You're the man, Joe. Thanks so much, everyone.
All right. Adios.